Jennifer Chavarini joins us by phone tonight. She's the author of a number of best-selling books in her Elm Creek Quilt series, as well as several books of historical fiction, including the best-selling Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker. Tonight, we're going to talk about her latest book, which is titled Enchantress of Numbers. I'm so delighted to welcome you back to Around Cincinnati.
Oh, thank you.
I want to start right in on this really fascinating book that you've written. Let's talk just about the early years. So even though Augusta Ada Byron is to the manor born, her childhood is at the very least prescribed, if not bleak. So could you talk just about her early life and what it was like?
Well, the novel takes place in the early 19th century, and Ada Byron is the daughter of Lord Byron, George Gordon, Lord Byron, the renowned poet, considered, if not the most revered of the Romantic poets, certainly up there. And his wife was Annabella Milbank Byron, and she was really revered in society for her good works and her intelligence and her own mathematical knowledge. And they were a very unlikely couple. Annabella was all reason and restraint and control, and Byron, of course, was famously described by a former lover and poet herself, Lady Caroline Lamb, as mad, bad, and dangerous to know.
Yes.
And yet somehow these two did develop a romantic relationship, and although it was certainly back and forth even before they got married, but they did end up marrying, but it was a very fractious relationship. Byron was really in love with his half-sister, and he saw marriage as a way to force himself not to indulge in that relationship any longer. But that's not a very good reason to marry someone else. He was emotionally abusive, and Annabella still loved him despite everything and really hoped that she could help redeem him. But ultimately, she knew she just couldn't do it. And she, shortly after Ada, their only child together, was born, she left him and fled back to her parents' home. Now, of course, she wasn't exactly suffering during all this, except emotionally. They were very wealthy families. Annabella's family had these very grand estates. So the young Ada never suffered materially. She had plenty to eat and safe, warm homes and all of that. And when she was quite young, she also had the love of her maternal grandparents. She especially adored her grandmother. But it was nonetheless a very lonely existence. She was not allowed to hear anything about her father. The things that she overheard were so negative that it sounded as if he was some kind of a monster. And so she began, of course, to question, you know, what does that mean about herself if she descends from this monstrous man? And also, her mother was distant and remote. She would often just take off for a few months at a seaside resort for her health, or so she said. Or she would just go and leave Ada in the care of nannies and her grandparents while she went off visiting friends at various country estates. So Ada grew up curious and also fearful of her absent father and longing for a mother who was just not around as much as Ada needed. So although she certainly didn't suffer from material comforts, she always did feel this absence of love. It was a very lonely existence as a child.
Ada does fall in love with one of her tutors. He's not of her class, so essentially her mother chases him off. And she then later is introduced into society. She makes her debut. And at one end of these gatherings, she meets a man named Charles Babbage, who has invented a machine that fascinates her. I'm going to skip forward to the next step in her life because, as it happens, part of her mother's wealth comes from factories. And she, as a young adult, takes Ada on a tour of them. And what does Ada discover at the factory where they're weaving?
The factories that they visit don't belong to Annabella's family. They are factories that she visits because Annabella was very interested in education. She was very interested and quite progressive in wanting to educate the children of the working poor, as the label that she used. And she wanted to learn more about how these factories and workshops were run, if the workers were treated fairly, how this led to better lives for themselves and for their children, or if there were reforms that were desperately needed. And she wanted Ada to learn all about this too. But of course, in addition to wanting to know about the conditions of the workers, they were both very interested in the amazing machinery that wove ribbons faster than any human could even dream of doing it by hand, or different workshops where artists painted ceramics and all kinds of things like that. So it was when she was examining the Jacquard loom, which could weave all kinds of very complex patterns into fabric, creating inches and yards of fabric with a speed that human weavers could never match, that Ada began to come up with ideas that could possibly help Charles Babbage's difference engine and analytical engine. They're calculating machines. They were amazing in their ability to carry out mathematical functions, but they were somewhat limited because it was a kind of a spoken dial system. And so you were limited by the number of dials and cogs and wheels that you could fit in your room. So she thought about if you could use punch cards the way that they did to organize the different complex patterns for the loom. Well, then you could have an endless array of calculations because you wouldn't need to fit it all within brass wheels and cogs and things like that. So she had these intuitive leaps that were just amazing. And she was really very influential in helping Babbage come up with other ideas for how to improve his devices.
Well, we'll leave it to listeners to learn more about her adult life, which I'm happy to say did include a great love. I feel like you've rescued several women now, starting with Mrs. Lincoln's dressmaker, from obscurity. What caused this shift in your writing life?
Well, I don't really feel like I've had a shift in my writing life. I've always been very interested in American history, especially women's roles in American history. And it's true that I have written a lot of contemporary fiction as well, but even throughout my earlier books, I always did delve into the lives of women in history. In some of the Elm Creek Quilts novels, for example, they were set during the antebellum period on the Underground Railroad, and I did include real-life historical figures in these books. For example, Elizabeth Van Loo, I included her in one of my Elm Creek Quilts novels as a minor character, but I was just so fascinated by her that I really believe that she needed not only to make a small appearance in another book, but she really deserved a novel that celebrated her achievements just all on her own. And so that idea, after nurturing it for a number of years, that idea turned into the book The Spy Mistress, which celebrates the life of Elizabeth Van Loo, a Union spy living in the heart of Confederate Richmond, Virginia. So I really feel like it's something that I've done all along, but it's true that in more recent years, I've focused perhaps on real-life historical figures and maybe have included fewer fictional characters. But even when I do that, all of my characters, if they are historical figures, they are inspired by history, but it is a historical novel. I don't write biography, so as I tell my readers often, there's novels inspired by history, but it is not meant to capture every detail of the person's life because that's just simply not possible within the framework of a novel.
Well, it's a wonderful read, and I'm just delighted to learn of Ada Byron that you bring to life in The Enchantress of Numbers. Thanks so much for visiting with us tonight.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Jennifer Chavarini about her latest book titled Enchantress of Numbers. You'll find more information at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.